You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East with MLB.com's five NL East beat reporters. We're going around with five questions about each club, looking at a big reason why things might go right, a big reason why things might go wrong, a pivotal player, a big unknown, and I'll be soliciting fearless, bold, and hopefully not foolish predictions from our beat writers as we talk Braves, Mets, Phillies, Nationals, and Marlins.
Talking Washington Nationals with MLB.com's Nationals beat reporter, Bill Ladson. And Bill, we're almost on opening day, so it's time to talk about the thing we've all been waiting for, the actual 2015 regular season. So the expectations with the Nationals are really, really high. And so I want to start with something pretty simple and straightforward. Give me the biggest reason that this team breaks through and accomplishes what they've been really thinking they could for a couple of years now, and not just win the division, but win the whole thing.
It's very simple. It's their starting pitching. It's the best they've ever had since I've covered this team. And also the offense. The offense, people don't talk about the offense, but to me, Matt Williams believes the key is the offense, because with runners on third, nobody out, they've had a tough time scoring runs. And Matt Williams wants to get those easy RBIs, as he puts it. So, and I agree, and we saw what happened against San Francisco last year. It was the offense. Offense is the reason that they were beat. So you hope that they can be consistent all year long, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it doesn't help that the injuries are there now, but that's the key.
This team was actually one of the highest-scoring teams in the National League this year. It's interesting we can kind of forget that. Do you think what happened in the postseason, and I'm the last guy to make too much of four games, so, but I wonder, as somebody who saw them all year, do you think what happened in the postseason was just something that can happen in four games, especially against a team like the Giants, or do you think it was in some way an indication of a weakness or an offense that could be attacked by the right pitching staff or something like that?
I think it's a combination of both, because if you remember last year, they missed Zimmerman. I mean, Zimmerman was on the roster, but he couldn't play because of his hamstring. And so I think the bottom line is they need to find some kind of consistency, or they'll be ending up like the Houston Astros of the late 90s, early 2000s, where, you know, they'd be so great during the regular season, and then when the playoffs came, they were out in one round. So I hope they're not like the Astros, but you can't help but think about it.
So let's turn this around. Give me one reason, if it does go wrong, that it goes wrong, either in the regular season or in October.
Injuries. Simple as that. Injuries. And because they missed Zimmerman in the postseason last year, I think they have to be consistent offensively. Last year, I think everyone thought, including myself, that the Giants were pushovers. And what we found out, that they really gave the Nationals a whipping pitching-wise and hitting-wise. So I think they have to be consistent offensively.
They're obviously dealing with some health issues now. Do you think that it's fair to say this might be a team that broadly might be a little injury prone, might have reason to worry all year long? You've got a guy like Rendon who's dealt with a lot of stuff in his career. Worth is not a young guy. Zimmerman's dealt with a lot the last couple years. Do you think it's maybe a bigger worry for this team than other teams staying healthy over the course of 6 months?
I think there's no doubt about it. If you look at their history, I mean, look at Bryce Harper. I mean, we didn't talk about him, but the last 2 years he's been hurt, and he was missed. Zimmerman, again, he was hurt. The thing about Jason Worth, yes, he has the shoulder problems, but the thing about Jason Worth, I've noticed since I've covered him, this guy's going to find a way to play. I'm not worried about him in terms of the injuries. I'm just worried about the consistency at the plate and everybody else. Rendon, I think Rendon will be all right when it's all said and done, but if they can just be consistent and stay healthy, they'll be okay.
Give me the one most pivotal player, and I'm not talking about the best guy, but I'm talking about the guy where if he's good, is really important. If he's bad, it really hurts them. Maybe has that wide range. Maybe somebody you'd call an X factor.
Well, I like to call it the Reggie Jackson factor, because when I was growing up in New York, Reggie Jackson carried the Yankees for like 2 weeks, and he was the one that helped them win those two championships. And I like to think of Bryce Harper as that guy. To me, he needs to be healthy. He needs to drive in more runs, hit home runs. And I told him that to his face. I said, hey, listen, I say you're the key to this whole thing, and he has to stay healthy. That's the key.
It's easy to forget how young he still is. I mean, there's some amazing stats. He would have been something like the second youngest regular in AA last year. Just some insane stuff. With that and the way that aging curves go and the way guys make leaps at this point, with the amount of experience he's starting to consolidate, do you think there is a big leap in Harper this year?
Yes, there's no question about it. He knows that too. What I want to see Harper do is be more consistent defensively, and I think he can do that. I think that was his biggest weakness of his entire game. Hitting-wise, he goes the other way. I mean, the guy is consistent there. With him, it's just a matter of staying healthy, and to me, get better defensively in right field, and I think he will. He's working hard at it.
This is a team with very few unknowns. It was actually a team that came to camp with very few unknowns, but what's the biggest unknown as this team sets out on 6 months? What's the biggest thing that we really don't know about how it's going to go for the 2015 Nationals?
It's very simple. It's the bench. I mean, the last 2 years, the bench has been terrible. It's just, once the regulars get hurt, there was no one really to step in. But, you know, I got spoiled by 2012 because David Johnson put a great bench together, and it was just produced all year long. And that's what the Nationals need in order to go all the way, I feel, because if they don't have a bench, they're going to have some problems because Kevin Franson was their best person last year. The thing about Kevin Franson, though, he didn't have any power. And the Nationals need to get at least some power, as you put it, that bat over the defense in there.
I think we both know that the main thing that makes a good manager is good players. But with that said, I think we've also both seen over the years cases where one thing a manager can really do is put guys in position to succeed, is find those right pieces and put them in a position to succeed. Do you think that the bench could reflect second-year improvement from Matt Williams? And I guess what I'm getting at is, as he learns what he's got more, do you think maybe he deploys his bench more effectively in year two?
Yeah, I think it really has nothing to do with Matt Williams. I just think that he needs the talent, and him and Rizzo do their best to get the best players, but they just need some players who are ready to hit as often as they can. And to me, Matt Williams to me is a great manager. He's the second best manager I've covered since I've covered this team. So I don't think it's a matter of Matt Williams. I just think it's a matter of getting the right players. I think the last 2 years they've been worried more about defense. They got to worry about the power now.
And now give me one fearless, non-obvious prediction. Don't tell me they're going to make the playoffs. Give me a bold, fearless, non-obvious prediction about the 2015 Nationals.
I think Bryce Harper is going to prove everybody wrong. I think he's going to be the MVP of the season. And I think he wants to prove it himself. So I'm counting on Bryce Harper to be the guy, the number one guy, and we'll see what happens.
Outstanding. Bill Ladson, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras.
Talking Atlanta Braves with MLB.com's Braves beat reporter Mark Bowman. We are finally just about at the beginning of the regular season, and I'm not sure anybody's more excited about that than beat reporters. And it's time to start taking a look at what the 2015 Braves are really going to look like. So, got five questions for you, and we start with number one for this Braves club. If it goes well, if they surprise people, if they sneak into the playoffs, if they are the team that they think they're going to be, what's the single biggest reason that we will look back at that happens?
I think it's going to happen. You know, this offense, you know, people can look and try.
Hey, sorry guys, I don't mean to interrupt, but Mark, we can barely hear you. I'm not sure if you can find a new spot, but it's just all covered by background noise, and I'd hate for this to be a waste for you guys.
Let me just go back here behind this fan.
That would be awesome. Thank you. Okay. Sorry for interrupting.
Okay, no problem.
So the intro is fine if you just want to pick it up with your question, Matthew.
Sure, okay.
Excuse me.
All right. Can you hear me a little better now?
seems better to me.
Okay.
So expectations for the Braves around the league are not that high. In Atlanta, I think they're higher. In beautiful Lake Buena Vista, I think they're higher. So question one is, if this team is to surprise people outside the organization and sneak into a playoff spot as they believe they've got a real shot to do, what's going to be the biggest reason that we'll look back at that that happened?
I believe it's going to have to be the pitching staff. You know, you can look at it and try to be optimistic. If by putting the ball in play more consistently, they're going to score more runs, and maybe they will. It's still not going to be a great offense. If they're going to have to get great years out of Shelby Miller, Julio Teheran, and Alex Wood at the front of the rotation, and hope that their bullpen plans pan out with Jim Johnson and Jason Grilley proving to be valuable setup men for Craig Kimbrell.
Miller's kind of an interesting guy. He's kind of not gotten a lot of attention relative to some of the other guys, but he's a guy who seems to me to potentially be a 2 or 3 starter in the big leagues this year. What have you seen from him this spring?
You said Shelby Miller?
Yeah.
Shelby, you know, what we've seen is a guy who has built off that success he had last year when he started throwing the sinker. The last 10 or so starts there with the Cardinals. He's a guy with a lot of confidence, 24 years old, you know, former first-round draft pick. You're seeing a guy who I do think. I think that he is a long-term number one, well, number two for sure type of starter. You know, I hate to throw around that term ace, but, you know, could he develop into that? Yeah, but he is certainly a guy as he's now continuing to move past being a thrower, distancing himself from his days as a thrower, adding to his repertoire, looking much more like a pitcher. I think could have a very strong season, and the future is bright for him.
One of the unfair but maybe not unreasonable comps that was hung on him early when he got to the big leagues early in St. Louis was that maybe there was a little Matt Cain in him. Do you think does that look like a reasonable comp for Miller if he develops into the guy that we hope he will?
Yeah, I mean, I probably need to see him a little bit more. I don't really see Matt Cain right there off the bat, but that's a nice comparison. Yeah, I guess the description that I gave there was a solid number two. He could pitch like an ace on many days. Yeah, I think he kind of fits that Matt Cain mold, and you know, that gives you even more reason to understand why the Braves were willing to give up 1 year Jason Hayward for 4 years of him.
So the flip side of that, question two is, if they fall short, if this is a long year, if this feels more like a rebuilding year, which nobody there hopes or expects it will, what do you think we'll look back on as the primary culprit for that?
Well, I think it will simply be that the offense just lacks firepower. You look and the one home run, you know, power threat in your lineup, Freddie Freeman, doesn't have legitimate protection in the lineup. So we're looking at the possibility he gets walked quite frequently throughout the year. Maybe Eric Young Jr., you know, while he might be in a nice, maybe he played center field better than you expected, he goes back to producing an on-base percentage similar to he did last year. And then all of a sudden, you know, maybe V.J. Upton comes back in June or, you know, sometime in May or June, and you know, it continues to be the V.J. Upton that he's been in the past. There's enough reason to doubt this offense that I think that will – we can easily pinpoint that as the potential culprit.
Who's the most pivotal player on this club? Who's the guy that, if he succeeds, that's a really good sign, and if he doesn't, they're in trouble?
I tell you what, Christian Bethencourt is very intriguing. And now it's not going to stand out to you as a guy who, offensively, I'm expecting him to be better than what was being projected a couple years ago in the minors. He's made strides. You know, maybe he's a 240 to 250 hitter. By the 8-10 home runs, something like that. I think one thing they need him to do is just be able to handle that pitching staff, get through games, be the defensive, show off his arm, provide strength with his arm there behind the plate, prove that he isn't a guy. He isn't lazy like he has been perceived to be at times in his career. I think if he develops into the kind of player that the Braves are hoping, he could have a great impact on this team. You kind of know what you're going to get from the Freemans and Simmons. Bethancourt's that question mark, so I think he's one guy who could have a significant impact.
What's the biggest unknown about this team? What's the one thing that we're just not going to know until they're playing games and getting deep into the season?
You know, I think maybe you've gotten a sense of it, but Jace Peterson. I think Jace Peterson is going to be a solid player. I think I've told you in the past that I don't see him as an all-star type guy, but he's one of those players that every team's going to want to have. He's a great athlete. I think the Braves fans are going to quickly understand why it looks like he's going to be in the lineup every day, whether that's at second base, maybe occasionally going over to third base, especially if Jose Peraza ever reaches the big leagues at some point this year. He's a guy that can do a little bit of everything for you with the glove, the bat. He's probably 280, 290 type guy. If he plays as much as I expect him to, you're looking at 20 to 25 stolen bases. So a guy that's going to contribute a little bit across the table, and a guy that's just fun to watch.
And finally, give me one interesting, bold, surprising prediction about the 2015 Braves.
I see this as a team that if they stay healthy, it's a team that's going to compete with flirt with that 500 mark. That's not a bold prediction, probably. But what I will say is Chris Johnson is not going to compete for a batting title this year, but you're going to see a guy that's going to get back to that 290, 230, or 290 to 300 hitter. He's going to hit a lot more line drives and be much more of a full hitter this year. I think you're going to see him sit against some right-handers, but at the same time, I think it's going to be a much looser platoon, and he will be much more productive, maybe even than he was when he did hit 321 in 2013, just because there may be just a little more pop in that bat this year.
All right, well, Mark Bowman, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking New York Mets with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter Anthony Nocomo. And while you will soon be leaving the glory that is a taco and a helmet, you'll also soon be covering games that count, and that's obviously an exciting thing. We are ready to talk regular season, and I've got five questions about the 2015 Mets for you. So number one is, if this team hits its goals, if it gets where it wants to be, which is a return to the postseason, what's going to be the single biggest reason that happens?
Well, let me start by saying I know you love the taco and the helmet, but Citi Field has some pretty good concessions itself.
You make
a fine point, sir. Yeah, but to answer your question, for the Mets to make the playoffs, what has to happen? You can answer that any number of ways. In my mind, you need the pitching staff to go out and be the pitching staff that they think it can be. You don't have Zach Wheeler anymore. He's missing the entire season. You do have Matt Harvey, and if he can go out and be at least something approaching Matt Harvey of 2 years ago, then all of a sudden you have that staff ace. You have a guy that scares opposing teams. Jacob deGrom comes back and, again, not necessarily repeats what he did last year, but proves that it wasn't a fluke and is a very good number two behind Matt Harvey, then all of a sudden you've got a rotation that could conceivably compete with the Nationals, and so on and so forth down the line with the John Neeses and the Bartolo Colons and the Dylan Gs, and then you get into the prospects. If Noah Syndergaard comes up and sort of does what Matt Harvey did and what Zach Wheeler did when they came up for the first time, it's all about the staff because, even though they made improvements to this lineup, it's not one of the better lineups in the National League. I don't think anyone would argue that. They should be better than they were offensively a year ago. But what they need to do is beat people with their pitching because there's other teams out there that might be comparable. But if the Mets can go from being a very good, certainly above average staff to an elite one, that's what gets teams to the playoffs.
And conversely, if they fall short, if it is another year, maybe around 500, not really in contention, what will be the biggest culprit? What will have gone wrong if they don't make the postseason?
Well, I think you can answer it sort of the same way as it would be that pitching. If Matt Harvey struggles in his return from Tommy John, if Jacob deGrom falls off, if Noah Syndergaard repeats last year and, everyone thought he was going to be up a year ago, if he goes through another not-so-great season at AAA, then all of a sudden you look up and you've got the Washington Nationals who have an excellent rotation, and they're beating you, you know, because of that. You've got the Marlins, who are this upstart team, who have some nice arms themselves, and all of a sudden their rotation looks just as good as yours if those things happen. So, you know, it's all about sort of development of some of those younger guys, the Syndergaards of the world. It's all about, and I would even throw it to DeGrom in that group, even though he won the Rookie of the Year. You know, he hasn't done it for a full season, so it's something the Mets would like to see. It's all about pitching, it really is. And, you know, the Mets will hit a little bit. They're not going to hit the cover off the ball, but if they can beat teams in innings 1 through 7 with what they have on the mound, it's going to be a much better summer for them.
Number 3, who is the one most pivotal player, not the best player, but the guy where if he's good, they're good. If he's not, it's trouble.
You know, I'd go with David Wright on that. And so you could argue whether or not he's still the best player on this team. But, you know, he's a guy who really hasn't produced the way the Mets would have liked consistently over the last 5 years or so. And I don't think anyone expects him to be David Wright of 2006, 2007. That guy is long gone. I highly doubt we'll ever see him again. But he had some very productive years in the meantime. And while he might not be that 30 home run guy, he could still go out there and give you great doubles power, hit a few over the fence, you know, that sort of thing. He still plays very good defense. So if he can stay healthy, which has been the huge thing for him, and it's not going to get any easier at age 32, all of a sudden that lineup becomes a lot better because you've got Curtis Granderson and Michael Kadire and Lucas Duda all hitting behind him. And if he's on base, that makes such a huge difference for them. If he can, I think a lot of that's going to be with not being able to stay healthy, which again, won't get any easier at this age. Then all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at a middle of the lineup that doesn't quite compare to those of the other teams in the league. So he's everything to them because they really believe that David Wright still has the potential to be a very good number 3 hitter. And if he's not, that's a huge blow to the team.
Number 4, what's the biggest unknown? What's the thing that we're just not going to know until this team is playing games and we see them on the field?
Biggest unknown, I think, would probably be what Curtis Granderson has to offer. This is a guy I think a lot of Mets fans are afraid he's turning into the next Jason Bay, guy they gave a 4-year deal to. And while Granderson certainly had a better first season for the Mets than Jason Bay did, it wasn't what the team had hoped for. Certainly he had 20 home runs, but that's about all he hit. The average was very low. The on base was low. You know, he wasn't basically doing the things that made him a star with the Tigers and with the Yankees. So if he can get back to doing that, working with new hitting coach Kevin Long, he's got the outfield fences which have come in and right center field, which should help him to some extent. You know, that's huge for them. And it's hard to tell sort of where he's at because he's another guy who's in his mid-30s now. And is what we saw last year just the decline of age, or is it a guy adjusting to a new ballpark, a new team, a new league? I think over the first month, 6 weeks of the season, we'll have a very good idea of what Curtis Granderson can offer. And just like I was talking about with David Wright, that just goes such a huge way in the middle of the lineup of making them good or not good, depending.
And finally, give me a fearless, bold, interesting prediction about something that's going to happen with the 2015 Mets.
The biggest, bold, interesting prediction. I'm going to go ahead and I may eat my words on this one, but I'm going to say that Henry Mejia remains the closer the entire season. There's been so much talk about, you know, Bobby Parnell, when he comes back, you know, if they just give him the job or if it goes to Mejia. I think Mejia is ready to sort of take this and roll with it. As long as he can stay healthy, I think you're looking at a guy who, when you look up in mid-May, will be having a pretty good season. And at that point, do you replace him with Bobby Parnell? Probably not. You probably like to ease Parnell in. And then all of a sudden you're looking up and it's July or it's August and, you know, Mejia is still holding down. So I think, you know, you're going to look at this and you're going to have Mejia locking down this bullpen. And I guess you could say Bobby Parnell getting wally-pipped, so to speak, because it wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't really play that role for the Mets again if Mejia really takes it and runs with it.
All right, well, Anthony Jacobo, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras.
Talking Miami Marlins with Joe Fusaro. We are closing in on opening day, and so we are taking a look at what the 2015 Marlins are going to look like. So I got five questions for you, and it starts with one. What's the biggest reason that this goes right, that this team goes on, makes a postseason, and delivers on the promise that a lot of people around the organization think they really have?
I have to say it's rotation. That starting five has to keep step with the Nationals, with the Mets, and everybody else. They got quality arms. They've had their ups and downs in spring training. I don't put a lot of stock in spring training performances as long as they're healthy. Stuff is there. They got to kind of – those starting five have to do their part until Jose Fernandez comes back midseason. If they do, it could be a fun year.
Are they good enough to carry this team if – and I'm not talking about major. I'm not talking about stuff to worry about with Fernandez, but just as it gets closer – if it's tricky, if it's an extra few weeks or whatever, if we're looking at late July, it's whatever, instead of June, are they good enough to be that driving force for a contending team without him for longer than expected?
Yeah, if those guys aren't doing their part, there is some organizational depth. It might mean a Justin Nicolino is starting off in AAA, who they like a real lot, in that first month or two, make strides that could kind of, you know, add that insurance policy, someone that, you know, is going to pitch at a pretty high level and enable them to get to where they go. They feel they have more depth. They used 13 starters last year. That scared them. It's the most they've ever used in a season. It's not the formula. I think the Royals use six, you know, all year. And so, you know, they're trying to keep that depth that they like, but I think they're kind of budgeting 10 starters to fill five spots, and Jose is one of those 10. So, yeah, they're going to need a Nicolino or somebody with a little more high-end potential to keep them around.
Question two, what's the biggest reason that it won't happen? What's the biggest thing that would cause this team to fall short of their expectations?
Well, we could go with the big man. We could go with Stanton. If Stanton, for whatever reason, gets... you know, isn't the same, if obviously a serious type of injury, but, you know, they need him. They built this team more than ever. Did they identify one man to build around, and it was Stanton, and it's all there. It's all on the plate for him, so the big man's got to come in and play at an MVP caliber level.
What are the indications on that we've seen so far this spring as he comes back from a pretty traumatic season-ending injury?
Yeah, I think he may not have the strongest April, you know, based on just maybe missed time and rustiness. But I think he is looking and striding really well to be a very dominant force.
Question three, what's the biggest unknown question facing this team? What's the thing that we really don't know how it's going to turn out?
Let's go with the bullpen. You know, they feel they have really good quality arms back there. They like Cishek as closer, but you know they're going to have to pitch at a level. And if the starters aren't doing their part, you know they're going to have to pitch at a level. They're going to make up ground with the Nationals based on how their bullpen and how they pitch collectively, because they don't have the starting five. Nobody has that. So those guys, if they're getting 5 2/3 or 6 good innings from their starter, then that bullpen is going to have to do their part to help them beat Washington.
Do they have the pieces beyond Cishek for that bullpen to be that force?
I think they have some really interesting arms that's still going to have to prove it. They got more guys that could go multiple innings than I've ever seen before. And I think that might be something if they're reinventing the wheel a little bit and kind of thinking outside the box instead of just he's my sixth guy, seventh guy, eighth guy. You know, that they may lean on a Brian Morris to go one plus one night and a A.J. Ramos maybe the next night, or obviously they got a David Phelps that can go multiple. So they certainly got the numbers.
Number four, give me one most pivotal player, not the best player, but the guy where if it goes well for him, this is a really great season, and if it goes poorly, it's worrisome.
Yeah, catcher Jared Saltalamacchia, he had a very, very down year. Be the first to admit it, defensively, offensively. They're counting on him. You know, he signed 2 more years. He's already won a World Series. He had a big year a couple of years ago in Boston. They're really hopeful for a bounce-back year. If he could, you know, because he is a power bat, he has to know he's not being counted on to do all the big, big lifting. But, boy, if he could, you know, get, you know, the 30-something doubles and hit, you know, double digits, 15 home runs, you know, provide that power at the bottom of the order. And then, you know, pl- play average. You can't be below average defensively with this pitching staff. He is, a lot of people might think the season hinges on Jared Solomonki.
And again, hard to know at this point, but what are the very preliminary signs on him?
Yeah, it's really hard to tell because, you know, the strikeouts are there, the swing is still pretty long. But he's a veteran. You know, he's a guy with a bit of a track record. You know, it's going to be a big, as we close out camp, to see how the stride he comes in. But working hard, you know, maybe with a little bit of less pressure, the familiarity in the league, they're going to be banking on that. Right now, from my point of view, too early to tell.
And number five, give me one fearless, bold prediction, and I'm not talking about a number of wins. Give me some interesting prediction about what happens with this club between now and October.
Jose Fernandez comes back and basically becomes the biggest off-season acquisition by any team, and Jose Fernandez is pitching a play-in game for the Marlins to go to the postseason.
That means he can't go game one of division series.
He'll go game three or four.
All right, Joe Fusaro, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras.
Talking Philadelphia Phillies with MLB.com's Phillies beat reporter Todd Zalecki. And Todd, you and beat reporters all across Florida and Arizona are very happy campers right now because it's almost time for games to count. We are ready to start talking regular season and know our season preview for the Phillies, and I've got five questions for you. And it starts with, number one, if this team surprises, if it is in contention and really shows more than I think a lot of people expect from them, what's going to be the number one reason that that happens?
I think the number one reason that the Phillies would surprise would be the continued advancement or maybe, you know, turnaround from some of the younger players. I'm speaking specifically about Cody Ashe. He hit 250 last year, showed a little bit of power. You know, if he can take the next step forward, that would be a big boost. Dominic Brown is a guy who's basically, in my opinion, going to get his last shot with the Phillies. He struggled mightily last year, but they still see a glimpse of that potential. Say Dominic Brown comes back and shows what he did in 2013 when he made the NL All-Star team. If Ben Revere can continue to be a 300 hitter, Odubel Herrera, the Rule 5 draft pick, they've loved what they've seen from him so far. If he can actually hit big league pitching on a consistent basis, so those younger type hitters, Freddie Galvis, if he can maybe surprise people and be a 250, 260 type of hitter in the number eight spot. So if some of those young hitters that they want to get, they want to see play a little bit more to get a better idea of how they fit in the future, if those guys actually take that next step forward, then I think this team could surprise a little bit because I think their bullpen is going to be pretty solid. But in my opinion, the big, big question mark right now is the offense.
Conversely, if it doesn't go well, if this is a really long year in Philadelphia, what's likely to be the biggest culprit?
I think it's tough to choose between the offense and the rotation. But since we just talked about those young guys in the offense, I think the rotation took a big hit in losing Cliff Lee. Now, you know, it's tough to say that they expected him to make 30 starts coming off an elbow injury that he had to rehab a second time from. But losing Cliff Lee was a big loss. And if everything had broken right, you know, you would have had Hamels and Lee atop the rotation with Aaron Harang as your number three, Jerome Williams as your number four, David Buchanan as your number five. All those guys move up a notch. Aaron Harang's had some back issues this spring. He seems to be past them, but certainly worth watching for a guy his age. And that number five spot right now, you don't really see going into the season an obvious guy to really hold that spot down and make even 20, 25 starts. You know, so right now the rotation, it looks a little suspect, and I think that could hurt them. You know, the bullpen should be a strength this season, but you also don't want to overwork these young guys. You know, you want to make sure that they're still firing on all cylinders, you know, a year or two down the road, when this team starts to compete a little bit and maybe the challenges for a postseason first. So you don't want to tax these guys too much and you kind of worry that the rotation might not be able to do it, kind of eat up enough innings to do that for them.
Who is the one most pivotal player, the one guy who kind of, as he goes, they go?
Oh, boy. You know, honestly, I think a big season And again, we're talking about rebuilding with the Phillies, but I think a big part of this team this season is going to be Ryan Howard, and I say that for a couple of reasons. One is, if he comes back and he hits, improves upon what he's done the past couple of years, and people actually like what they see so far from him. I'm not saying he's going to go out and hit 30 home runs and knock in 100 runs, but he seems to be moving better. His swing seems to be better. He seems to be a little bit quicker so far in spring training, leading into opening day. But if he can improve upon his numbers from the past, improve his production from the past, certainly that'll help the offense out a little bit. And two, it's critical because if he does hit a little bit, all of a sudden his trade value might go up a little bit, and maybe the Phillies can move him to another team and get some sort of prospect at some level to kind of help replenish his farm system. So I think Ryan Howard is really critical in a lot of ways.
What's the biggest unknown about this club? What's the thing that we just don't know right now that we won't know until they've played some games and we actually see this team on the field?
I think the biggest unknown is, how good some of these young guys can be. You have some ideas. The guy that comes to mind is Cody Ashby. The Phillies love his makeup. They think he can be a good everyday third baseman in the big leagues. But they want to see him take that next step in his second full season in the majors. So there's a lot of those young guys right now are in that unknown area. They have an idea. They're kind of keeping their fingers crossed that they're going to take that next step forward. But they won't know until the games actually start to matter. Is Dominic Brown, is he 2013 Dominic Brown? Is he 2014 Dominic Brown? Those types of things, we're going to have to wait and see. And obviously the Phillies are hoping for the better than, they're hoping that these guys actually take the step up rather than taking the step back and down.
Finally, give me one fearless, bold, interesting prediction about the 2015 Phillies. Something beyond the standing. Something interesting about this team.
I think that the Phillies bullpen is going to establish itself as one of the better ones in baseball, and I think Phillies fans are going to see a light at the end of the tunnel based off the way this bullpen performs. I really think they're going to continue to improve. Ken Giles, Jake Diekman, Justin Freitas, Luis Garcia, who's in line for a bullpen spot, Rule 5 draft pick Andy Oliver, who's in line for a bullpen spot. I think this bullpen could really impress some people this season, and I think if the Phillies' offense and rotation struggles, we'll say, all right, we've got something in place here going forward that we can get excited about now. If they can just get that rotation turned around a little bit, maybe add a bat here or there, the bullpen is in place, and that can make a big difference.
If they move Papelbon, is this still an asset? Is the bullpen still an asset if they move Papelbon?
Is the bullpen? I'm sorry.
Are you still bullish on the bullpen even if they are able to pull off a Papelbon trade?
Yes. I am. I think Giles and Diekman have shown enough potential this past season that. The bullpen still should be good, even without Papelbon. Now, obviously, they'll be better with Papelbon than without him. But I think the pieces are there, talent-wise, to continue to pitch well. I think Ken Giles, he won't come out and say it, but I know that he would love to be the Phillies' closer. This is not a guy who's going to step into that role and be intimidated or scared. He's embracing the fact that he throws 100 miles. He has it on, he doesn't shy away from the attention at all, and I think that's an important thing. So if Papelbon would get traded, I think Ken Giles would be more than happy and very confident to take that role from him.
All right. Todd Blucky, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.